We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And the season has started. The Pelicans haven't won any games, though. So, Michael, should we just pack it in? We're done. Season over. Might as well give up.
The season doesn't start until you win your first game, right? They give you that buffer.
You get to keep trying.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was assuming. No, I mean, they didn't win, but we've had some entertaining games, and you could say that the schedule's only bound to get easier, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it can't get much harder than Golden State, San Antonio on a back-to-back. I mean, come on. Like we're not the Thunder who get to play the Suns, the Lakers, and the 76ers in their first three games of the season.
Yeah, but if we were playing those games, we might get easy wins, and then AD would be sitting in the fourth, and we wouldn't get to see 95 points over the first two games.
It's true.
It's just absolutely crazy. Which game? I mean, I guess it's obvious which game you enjoyed more. The Warriors or the Spurs game, but would you say that there were good takeaways from both of those games, even though they lost, or do you just kind of throw the San Antonio game out because it's the second on a back-to-back?
No, I mean, there's still important things to see there, like the fact that Etuan Moore hadn't forgotten how to dribble and score. That was nice. I was appreciative of that. But I mean, the San Antonio game was pretty rough, and they were basically just taking advantage of every mistake the Pelicans made. And I mean, I wouldn't even say they were that mistake-prone in that game. It's just when they made a mistake, San Antonio crushed them. And they had guys who could make open shots, and the Pelicans didn't know how to make an open shot. Because they got a lot of them. Like, you can't say the Pelicans weren't generating open looks.
You know, one guy who was knocking down those open shots, at least at first, was Dante Cunningham.
It's true.
Keeping him in the game.
So I gotta say, like, I've been murdering Dante Cunningham for a year, and he was probably the third best player on our teams these three games, so I should just probably shut up now.
I mean, he shows up, you basically know what to expect, and then you get a little gravy. Like, you have no idea what to expect. The guys that we signed this offseason, plus the ones we drafted, Buddy Hield, obviously, are a combined 3 of 38 from 3 in these first three games. Like, I get people say that shooters are streaky, but how often do you see the same streakiness, you know, on the same team? The thing that's confusing me is when you have a superstar like Anthony Davis, who's clearly playing out of his mind, you know, the phrase that everybody uses in the NBA is guys like that make it easier for everyone around him. And he is getting guys open shots. They're just hitting it at, I mean, essentially, you have a bunch of, gosh, I wouldn't even know a player who shoots 16-17% from three and actually takes them.
Lance Stephenson 2 years ago in Charlotte?
So, yeah, you got four Lance Stephensons around. Like, how is it possible? I know we said that Etuan Moore was the only really proven shooter, but even at their worst, the other guys are 30-32% shooters. Do you have any possible explanation for how a whole team goes cold for three straight games?
Nerves? No, I don't know. It's flukish. That's all I can say. I don't. There's no way they're going to end up shooting this poorly for that many open looks. They're generating open looks. Hield has forced a couple. Moore has forced a couple. But in general, Hill hasn't taken a bad three-pointer yet. He hasn't hit a three-pointer yet either. So, and I do wonder at Hill, too, because Hill was a good corner shooter, but he was pretty poor from above the break when we take a look at what he did in Indiana. So why is he always taking above the break threes and he's not in the corner? That's kind of weird to me.
Yeah, I mean, they seem to have Moore in the corner a lot. His guy just respects them and he can't get open looks.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't you feel like we've been saying this for three straight years now when we say, well, they're getting open looks, they're bound to fall eventually, and then they do for a little while, but mostly they don't? I just don't know. I can't come up with an explanation. I mean, like I said, these guys, let's not act like we've got great shooters. You know, who've done it for multiple years over their career, but, you know, what's going on with Langston Galloway and then,
good God,
I mean, Buddy Hield, there's no two guys getting decent rotation minutes shooting like this in the league. And, I mean, they're both supposed to, I mean, Galloway should be a 32-35% guy at worst. And Hield, yeah, he's just a rookie, but shooting translate, it's just, it's odd, and I think it'll pick up, but I don't expect it to be above league average.
No, I don't think you could ever assume a player is going to be above league average as a rookie. Like, even the best three-point shooters, when they enter the league, generally struggle from three. There are a couple guys who've beaten that, you know, like Klay Thompson being one of them, but most of the best three-point shooters usually shoot around 34%, and it takes a year or two to adjust back up to the 40% where they should be. But so Hield, he's missed a lot of shots. But I expect at some point he'll start making them. I don't even know what to say about Hield anymore. Like, I'm supremely confident from everything I've seen up to the beginning of the season that he was going to at least be a shooter. But holy crap, he's missing everything.
Yeah, I'm obviously going to wait a while, but there does come a point in which you start to worry. I think it'd be crazy for it to be anytime soon.
Right.
But as I pointed out in a piece I put up today, you know, when people were having this debate over the summer prior to the draft of, you know, should we go for Hield or a guy like Murray? The people would say, well, you know, Hield's older. And then the counter to that always was, oh, I guess you wouldn't take Damian Lillard then, huh? Or, oh, I guess you wouldn't take Steph Curry then, huh? And, you know, it was always kind of this smart-ass response in that vein. Well, if you're going to say that then once we get into real games, you got to start measuring them against those outliers. And Damian Lillard was a monster in Summer League. Damian Lillard came out his first three games in the NBA and put up 20 or more. Like, I'm not worried about Buddy Hield because J.J. Redick was bad also his first couple games, and after 4, 5, 6 years, he finally got it. So I'm not saying he's going to be a bust, but don't you start to get that feeling that he's not going to be a star or superstar? Like, guys like that, how often can you remember, I know it's only three games, but how often can you remember starting off a career like this?
The guard that I always comes to mind, and it's just because I was paying a lot of attention, Deron Williams was garbage for the first 3 months of his rookie season. Like, hot, smoking piles of garbage. And right around the end of December, so I guess it wasn't really the first two months of the season, he started to get it, and by March, he was impressive enough that the Utah announcer decided that he was going to give him his Rookie of the Year vote over Chris Paul, which was the stupidest decision on the planet ever in the history of ever. I'm still very bitter about that. There are guys who just take a while to figure it out, and once they do, they start playing pretty well. I'm not saying Hield is going to be Deron Williams, and I think I was firmly in line with the J.J. Redick kind of comparison. I think that's the kind of player he's slated to be, which no one is going to be upset with having J.J. Redick on their team. I think there's a lot of teams in the league that would happily make that trade to have J.J. Redick as their starting shooting guard. So if he'll gets to that level in 3 years, I think we'll be pretty happy. But it's pretty rough going so far watching him. And even like when he has like moments to be awesome, he's just so eager to do it, he screws it up. So, rather than just be all negative about Hield, give me one good thing you saw about Hield that you appreciated these games.
I mean, Ryan, he's been terrible. And even with Deron Williams, his first game goes 7-for-14, puts up 18 points. He also had multiple 20-point. I don't know where you see it. Like, the J.J. Redick one makes sense, but J.J. Redick didn't become a player that I would want on this team till, like, his third team.
Yeah.
Which will do us no good if Buddy Hield follows the same path. So, I mean, he's... If he wasn't a sixth-pick rookie, you like to do this sometimes, where if I'm just coming in and watching a game for the first time, or your friend comes over to your house, and he doesn't know Buddy Hield from Etuan Moore from, you know, Lance Stephenson. I don't know what I would say that I thought was good. I remember one really smooth transition layup. I mean, even the shots he's made were shots that were basically layups that were created for him or nobody else was there. One of the layups he made was the other night, I think, in the Golden State game when the game was already over and Golden State just let him score. Like, so you're asking me to tell you something good?
Yeah.
He did. The best thing he did is sent out a tweet tonight that said it's going to get better. That's the thing I could be most optimistic about is that he knows how bad it's been and he's going to keep working hard just like Austin Rivers did all those years.
Wow, are you actually comparing him to Austin Rivers?
No, I'm just saying that you know, at some point, if he continues to be bad, no matter how much everybody wants him to be good, like, if we were fans of the other 29 teams, or we were a fan of, let's say, Denver, you know, or I don't know, whoever else, we would be saying, whew, we dodged a bullet on that one. And overreacting that way. But since we're fans of this team, we're going to give them all the benefit of the doubt and just call it jitters and this and that. But there's been a lot of jitters so far between Summer League and the regular season. And the one thing this guy was supposed to be able to do is score. And he really hasn't shown, outside of maybe one preseason game, the ability to do that. on this level yet. So that's just the objective truth. I'm rooting for it as much as anything, but if we were fans of another team, that's how we would be calling it.
Okay. I would say his defense wasn't terrible.
Do you have any specifics on ball, off ball, or what did you like?
So he has been pretty good at tracking guys who are flaring to the wing. The only Clay gave him some troubles, but Clay gives everybody trouble, so I'm not freaked out by that. But in general, he's been able to track players pretty well. He fights through screens. He doesn't die on them. He's able to push them off their spot a little bit. And in that very first game, Denver was purposely running guys at him nonstop, and sometimes they scored, but he was at least competing and pushing them away from where they wanted to go. So wasn't terrible, and rookies can be terrible.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe that's the path. That's what he did at Oklahoma's first year, is he just wasn't able to score like he did in high school, so he became a defensive-minded player his first year at Oklahoma, and then continued to work every summer, and then eventually, he became the offensive threat he did. So maybe that's the path, and I'm sure he's willing to do it, but it's hard, especially when you've seen, I think Buddy Hield, I watched more of him than every college player combined last year, just because he was fun to watch. And when you see a guy go from that kind of score to what he's doing now, it worries you a little bit. Although I will say the two ways that Buddy really started getting hot in Oklahoma, in games when he would start to go on his 10, 12-point runs, it almost was always one of two things, if not both. One, Oklahoma would get an offensive rebound, and he was fantastic at kind of finding an open lane for the kick out off of an offensive rebound, and his defender would lose him for a split second, and he would hit a three. And the second was in transition. And you think about the Pelicans, what are the two things they don't do? They don't get out in transition, and they don't offensive rebound. So the two ways that you could get him some nice open looks, this team so far is just pretty much refusing or incapable of doing.
All right. So that's Buddy. it's been the new additions have been very, very rough. Would you say Moore had a good game before the San Antonio one?
I've liked everything from Moore. The shots are going to come and go. He's hitting more than the other, guys on this team, but the defense is always there, sometimes too much, picking up some stupid fouls, but the defense is there, the effort's there. So I've been fine with him. And I think he's been worth his salary the season. The other guys, if you thought I was being, negative and it was depressing about Buddy, do not even bother asking me about Solomon Hill. So let's talk about literally anybody else.
You don't like what Solomon Hill's given us? I guess I'm wrong. I guess he did manage to hit a three. When did he hit a three? I don't remember him hitting a three.
I think the game was already over against San Antonio.
Okay. I just remember him missing everything he shot, it feels like.
Do you call it brave? What would you call it that he's had those three games like that, and he both, to his teammates and in the media after an impassioned speech, basically called his teammates out? Like, that takes some cojones to be playing that bad offensively and to call people out. What did you think of that?
I was surprised that he was the one who was doing the talking. I really was. I don't have any other way to put it. Like, I don't know how you have a negative PER and say anything to anybody about anything. Negative. He's got negative 0.31 PER right now. Holy crap.
And Specifically, his point was that, look, we don't have really any offensive players on this team outside of AD.
Yeah.
So we got to be dogs. The comparison I was thinking about is, yeah, this team basically has to play like those Iverson Sixer teams when Iverson would just score 35 or 40 and they would try to win games 82-78. So, yeah, maybe his point's right and that's how they have to win. Who do you think he thinks is not playing the way that they need to play to win games like that?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure he was probably thinking about the centers at the time. Because he didn't say that before the San Antonio game, wasn't it? I read it the morning of the San Antonio.
No, it was after the San Antonio game.
Was it?
Yep.
Okay.
After he put up another stinker, yeah, he called everybody out.
So, like, this is the weirdest thing about Solomon Hill, and, like you just mentioned that, like, we didn't expect them to come in and be world destroyers, three-point shooters, or, like, that they were going to be just able to do everything they wanted. But this is a guy who, two of his first 3 years in the league, shot basically league-average true shooting percentages, had turnover ratings, except for his rookie season, which is it's generally high as a rookie, that was below average for his position, and had a rebound rate that was high for a small forward. His rebound rate is 3.9% right now. Like, that makes Eric Gordon look like a genius rebounder. How do you fall apart like that? And it's not like Alvin Gentry's saying, Solomon Hill, don't crash the boards. Go ahead and run down the court and leak out. Like, the entire team is directed to come back and grab defensive rebounds. So how does that make sense? How can he be getting not even 4% of the available rebounds when he's on the floor? 4%.
Yeah,
available rebounds.
I haven't gone in depth, but I cannot remember one contested like the rebounds he does get are the ones that basically come right to him, and the other team isn't trying to offensive. Like, I don't remember honestly one contested defensive rebound. He kind of gets the defensive rebounds by default that come right to him. It's just. It's a skill set thing. It's a mentality. I don't know how he got them in Indiana. I didn't go back and watch. My assumption is that other guys boxed out and sealed, and he was just kind of the guy there, and he played so few minutes that if he got two, that his rebound rate looked decent. But it's clear as day, and I was saying this since the preseason, that he just does not have the mentality of a rebounder, no aggressiveness whatsoever on that end. So I don't expect it to come. I don't think you teach him at this point. Like, he has all the tools, he just doesn't know. And I don't think he flips a switch mentality wise. I don't think he ever becomes, an average or above average starting small forward rebounder. And that's sad, because that's what this team needs, you know, in addition to a guy who could at least be respected as a shooter.
Yeah.
So, yeah. My question on him, and gosh, okay, I'm going to find some positive things to say, I promise.
Okay.
But my question on him is, if he's this bad for a year, do you think, like, could you ever see a situation in which this GM or another one, and bites the bullet and is willing to accept Solomon Hill as a backup and goes out and finds another small forward? Or when you give a guy a contract like that, do you have to give him two and a half years and keep holding out hope that he could be a starter, because there's no way he's going to be able to have that kind of value off the bench?
Well, I mean, let's just be realistic. If he plays the way he's been playing, then no one is ever going to trade for him or ever want him. But the also reality is that guys who have played NBA basketball for as long as Solomon Hill has and has the track record he has, he's not going to post a negative PER. He's not. He's probably going to get back to 10 or 11, which is still replacement level, but he's not going to be this awful. I firmly believe he is not going to be this awful. And we'll see when that actually happens. I mean, it's been ridiculous.
Well, he's not going to be this awful, but how much better would he have to be for you personally, if you're the GM, to not go into the offseason? Let's say you have the fourth pick, and there's a stud small forward and a very good point guard prospect on the board, or, you know, in free agency, there's a small forward. Like, how much better would he have to be for you to say that, you know, you're not going to put another major resource into the small forward position because you got your guy?
He's got to be able to actually knock down some shots and continue to play defense. I mean, we've already talked about this. If he gives us, like, you know, 8 or 9 points, good defense, and we would like more rebounding, but probably not going to see it. Like, a couple, like, if he's just a facilitator on the wing and knocks down some open shots here and there and plays good defense, he's not overpaid. I mean, I know people are still thinking of $12 million a year as you know, the old Eric Gordon mini-max. $12 million a year is 8 or 9 in the old world. So,
I just hear a lot of people say that about Hill, where he's just got to do this, just got to do that, and they make those things seem easy, but he's literally doing none of them now.
Well,
and not only is he not doing them, what he is giving is at a super negative. So while those things seem easy in retrospect, a guy who could just facilitate and hit a three and play defense, like, that guy is still pretty rare. So I think there's a less than 3-5% chance that he could be that guy who just gives you that. I think you make it sound way too easy of a bar to jump over, where if he jumped over that bar, I would think it's a mini miracle.
Okay.
So, let me try to think of something positive. So
his defense is good. Like, he was giving Kawhi Leonard trouble for the moments he was actually guarding Kawhi Leonard. The Spurs actually ran switches to make sure that Hill was not guarding Leonard at various points in that game, because Hill was actually giving him some trouble.
I would agree. I would say his defense is a solid B. I would say his offense is a D to D minus. I mean,
wow, you're generous. His offense is blisteringly awful.
I mean, he doesn't turn it over at ridiculous rates, and he's a decent enough ball handler and passer where it's not embarrassing.
Okay.
To me, an F would be that you're just embarrassing in all those categories. I don't see the difference between him and Ashik.
Okay.
I think he is the small forward version of vastly overpaid. Yes, he has some things he does well, both that you could, you know, see and also with intangibles. But I think we basically found the small forward version of Omer Asik.
Wow.
I mean, I'm dying to be proved wrong. So anyway, something positive. Anthony Davis is
amazing.
I mean, the plays that stand out to me, like, we could point to the points and stats, but the things that stand out to me that get me really excited are plays that make me think, man, if and when they get some decent players around this guy, this team could be good. And it's specifically two passes he made to Cunningham in that San Antonio game. Like, the one in transition, everybody remembers, but there was also one in the half court that got Cunningham in an open shot. Like, he is becoming a well above average ball handler. When, what was it, 2-3 years ago, he never took more than one dribble, and if he did, it got goofy and really quick. And he's becoming a great passer. Like, yeah, we know all the things he could do with scoring the ball and blocking shots, but I would say that if I was making, like, his NBA 2K rating, you know, I don't know if there's any specific skill that I would have under an 85 or 90, except for obviously the injury one. But what would you say on the court is the thing that he does at a below A minus or B plus level?
3-point shooting. That's it. That's it. That's the only thing. Like, he draws fouls at an he's averaging 13 free throws a game. Averaging 13 free throws a game right now. Oh, wow. The last time I think the Hornets Pelicans had a guy who got more than like six was probably Alonzo Mourning. They get to go back that far to find a guy who drew fouls at this kind of rate. And there's nothing in his game that's weakness. He's steals. Like, there's a play where he was at the free throw line and he turned around, sized up Aldridge, started to dribble. Aldridge swiped at the ball and Davis did a behind the back dribble before driving left and hitting a floater. Like, holy crap. That's a guard. That's not a big man. That's never a big man. Just, I'm in awe of the guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's been absolutely unreal. And like I said, it's not only the production, it's the skill set that you see blossoming that gets you really excited. You know, the thing I keep coming back to is, I'm going to feel horrible. I forget who it was. I want to say it was Graham, but it might have been Nick. I'm thinking it's Graham. But remember Graham putting up that piece basically showing how much better Anthony Davis is with Drew Holiday than without him?
Yeah.
Like, is it possible? Is it possible we see, I'm not talking about production, I'm talking probably more about efficiency, but is it possible we see a 10% uptick when Drew gets back?
It's possible because he'll get some open looks that he's not getting right now.
That's, yeah.
I don't expect his numbers won't stay the same because his usage rate will fall as soon as Drew gets back. But it's absolutely feasible that he is going to be able to, you know, become more efficient. And right now, like, the funny part about it is, if we're talking effective field goal percentage, when we're talking just shooting stats, he's actually not that efficient for a big man. But the fact that he draws 13 free throws a game makes him hyper-efficient. He's taking 27 shots and getting 38 points off of those 27 shots every game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the absolutely insane thing to me of all these numbers is that he has 39 free throws. The rest of the team combined has 25. That's crazy. Like, that's just absolutely nuts. And it also kind of pisses you off because if he's getting that many free throws, he's getting teams, you know, guys in foul trouble, but he's also getting your team close to the bonus. And if a couple of other guys, you know, just were aggressive and got to the line as well and did other things, you know, you could be living at the free throw line in certain quarters, and instead it's just, you know, it's just one man trying to do everything while the rest of his teammates are clanging bricks from the outside. You know, it really is a shame that they've been this cold because, you know, I knocked on their defense, but the defense hasn't been terrible. 12th in the league. I mean, it's doing all right, but the offense is second to last in the league. And the question I have for you is, this team is playing at the third highest pace. Usually you want to play at a high pace when you feel like you know, you're going to outscore the other team, you've got a good offense, or that you're just a superior team, so you want more possessions. This team, I would say on most nights, overall talent, they are not the superior team. Might it be wise to
grind it up?
No. To bring down the pace, try to make it a slightly uglier game because they just don't have the horses to, you know, go 103 to 106 possessions a game and – beat even an average team right now with how thin they are.
So here's my general theory about fast-paced teams. You have to have shooting to make a fast-paced team successful. And the number one reason is you want to move quickly, you want to get into the middle, and you want to have it happen so fast that somebody makes a mistake, cheats off a guy he's not supposed to be cheating off of, or has to cheat off a guy because somebody else hasn't made it back in time. You find the open shooter, or they don't cheat off and you get an open layup. There is nobody on this team who's going to make an open shot. Can you think of a single fast-paced team that was successful that didn't have multiple skilled three-point shooters?
Honestly, no. I think it would be pretty much impossible.
Yeah. Like, the successful fast-paced teams of the past few years have been Golden State, the Houston Rockets for several years now, of course, the Phoenix Suns for quite some time, and there's a team that I'm forgetting. There's another one out there, but they also had, like, three different shooters that were really, really good. So it's like, it's kind of like we're once again in a situation where we're like, we have this amazing system and we're going to do it. But it doesn't matter because we don't have the right personnel for it. So, and, you know, we had two good shooters last year, and Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson. But we didn't have anybody to drive the fast-paced engine. So we're just kind of being the treadmill over and over and over again unless we actually figure out how to use these guys the right way together. I do have to make you stop for a second, though. And outside of Anthony Davis, give me two good things you've seen about this team, whether it's just improving over the three games, something that you've looked at and said, well, that should maintain and be pretty good for us going forward. Like, because, you know, we're now just 3 days or three, like, I guess it's like 6 days of just nonstop articles that are essentially like, Anthony Davis is amazing and everything else is a flaming pile of crap. So I don't actually feel that way. I watched those games and I felt like the Denver game could have gone either way. Just if a couple shots had gone down, we had won that game and they got their shots to go down. I thought that they played really well against Golden State and just didn't have the horses at the very end. San Antonio, they got blown out, but, you know, that happens sometimes against teams like San Antonio. So, but there were some things that happened there I felt pretty decent about. What are two things, other than Anthony Davis, can't say Anthony Davis, that you feel the team has actually going in the right direction or has been doing well?
I mean, so I see it a little differently. I don't think we stayed with a good Golden State team. I think they're still pretty bad.
Okay.
And they, you know, Phoenix took them to the... So if we're going to get all pat on our backs about staying close with Golden State, then we probably think Phoenix is good too. So that, I guess I didn't see it the same way. But I would say... I guess just the overall defensive tenacity, like we're getting up 5-6 feet above the three-point line and challenging guys on the perimeter and making it hard on them. You know, the problem has been coming as far as the swing kick. We're not getting out to guys. Lacking a little bit of communication and trust on some of our players, but I would say just the overall effort and ability to stay on a guy and not just get a first step blow by every single time on the perimeter. So I would say the perimeter defense is something I like. And then, gosh, the second thing would be, I mean, I do think that we found a diamond in the rough backup point guard in Tim Frazier that, you know, could be with us here through next year on a reasonable deal, and then you would have the bird rights after that if you wanted to keep him. So, you know, I think this team has kind of plucked a solid seventh, eighth, ninth man out of nowhere in Tim Frazier. I don't think he's a fluke or just getting numbers because, you know, somebody has to. I genuinely think he's a quality player, especially when he's going to be playing against second units moving forward.
Well, let me ask you that question then. Jrue Holiday comes back. We have a primary three-guard rotation of Frazier, Moore, and Holiday. Is that better than league average?
It would depend how Jrue plays. I mean, I would consider Jrue at his absolute peak a slightly above average starting point guard in this league that's loaded. I think more times than not, he's going to be about league average. Etuan Moore is going to be below league average. And Tim Frazier is going to be an above average backup. So, yeah, that would be an average three guard rotation.
Okay.
Do you disagree? Do you think it could be really good? Or?
I don't think it'll be particularly explosive, but I think it'll be very good and steady. So, yeah, about average. Like, that's how I think it has the potential to cause other teams problems, and that's really all you want is, like, if you have Jrue Holiday switch to shooting guard and Frazier at point guard, and Moore is shooting well, you're going to have the other team is going to have some trouble matching up with it at sometimes because they're not going to have three strong guards to try to match up all the time. So
the thing that you said was that, you know, we didn't have the you know, somebody to lead us last year and get guys shots, and now we don't have the dogs this year. The only thing, though, that keeps sticking in my mind is I watch a team like San Antonio, and the dogs that they put out on the court, you know, on paper, they look terrible, but then I'm sitting there watching three of their key pieces at, and some guy named Nicholas Laprototova is out there making plays. You know, Dwayne Dedman is making all kinds of plays.
He's making jumpers. Where the hell did that come from?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Patty Mills is looking like a god again.
Oh, Patty Mills is great, though.
I mean, but my point is, 4 or 5 years ago, if Patty Mills signs with Phoenix or, you know, whoever, Charlotte, instead of San Antonio, does he become 60% of this?
Yeah.
I would bet my life that he doesn't. So, like, we keep talking about, you know, and feeling bad that we don't have the players, we don't have the whatever. But San Antonio picks from the same crop. I mean, they don't have high draft picks. They don't this and that. They go out and they get a Patty Mills or a Jonathan Simmons or whatever a Bryn Forbes is or a Nicholas Laporta, whatever.
I'm enjoying you struggling with that name, by the way.
I don't need... Okay, I'm going to go Laprovitola? I don't know. But...
Even their own team announcers couldn't say it, so don't feel bad.
I'm just going to say Lappy.
Okay.
But, yeah, so I mean...
I will... By the way, he was probably the third best guard in all of Europe last year. So, there is that. I'll put that out there.
Yeah, okay. And Buddy Hield was the best player in all of college basketball. And he comes to our team and he sucks. So, whatever. So, I'm just saying, like, yeah, you could say that we got the energy done and whatever, but I see a team like San Antonio and they'll pull a guy out of nowhere. They'll turn Patty Mills from a guy who's struggling to get an invite to camp or a contract and eventually turn him into, you know, just an absolutely amazing player over years. So, you know, to me, I think if Solomon, it's just crazy, but to me, if Solomon Hill goes to San Antonio this summer, his first three games he's playing well, I just don't know what it is, but I can't put it all on that we don't have the players. There's something else missing in which, you know, we don't tend to get the best out of them. And just watching that San Antonio game reinforced it because they just find a whole bunch of guys, whoever's on the court, they're getting open shots. They're making good passes, and I find it hard to believe that they had those skills going to San Antonio. I feel like San Antonio fosters those skills.
I agree 100% that they do. Like, when was the last time you remember someone like Bryn Forbes, who, by the way, was like their bubble guy coming in? Like, they didn't think he was going to make it, and he managed to outplay some people in training camp and be the 15th man on the roster. And he came in and hit 2 threes on us. Like, our 15th man is Shake Diallo. Like, you going to expect him to have any real impact on the game? Not a chance.
Yeah, so stay on the positive for about 3 seconds. How about Lance? Lance do anything for you in that Golden State game?
Lance is exactly like I said. He's such a mixed bag. Like, there are moments where... So he is Tyreek Evans for me. Like, even like how he runs for some reason reminds me of Tyreek Evans. He's just... He is Tyreek Evans with all of the poor decision-making, yet all of the same talent that carries him past it. And it's just, that's what he is, and that's what he's going to be. And he's got a nice, you know, ability to pass when he wants to pass. And otherwise, he's selfish to the point of frustrating. He's better than Langston Galloway so far. Galloway has looked like utter, like, Galloway, I know he's a better shooter than he is, but he is taking the dumbest shots on the planet over and over again.
Quick, who's leading the Pelicans and made three-pointers this year?
Made three-pointers?
Yeah.
Probably going to be Dante Cunningham, right?
Yeah, boy. Made threes, three-point percentage, shooting a robust 50% from deep. That's where we are right now.
Yeah, Dante's been sticking it to me. I can't... Like, he has come in and played fairly well the games that he's played. By the way, he's got an 11 PER. See? Holy crap.
Yeah, and he looks like a stud on this team. All right, so I tell you that Tyreek's going to be back game 12. You got to get me 3 or 4 wins out of the first 11. What are you doing? What kind of strategies do you have? What are you doing to mix things up, whether it's rotations or schemes or whatever? What are you doing?
This team, I am limiting Ajinsa's minutes. I'm actually playing Ashik a little more. I think Ashik's been fine. I don't really have a problem with the way he's been playing, though. He's not getting very many minutes. Ajinsa's been awful. I probably limit Terrence Jones a little more than he is, because I think he is a hot disaster decision-making offensively and more than that defensively. And that's pretty much the only changes I'd make. I think Lance Stephenson is probably playing as much as he should be, with Hield not being able to score. Galloway, I might be more willing to slap him if he continues to take long two-point shots, because that's been driving me crazy. But other than that, like, at some point, these three-pointers are going to fall. Like, they are. Somebody's going to hit a couple of them. It's got to happen, right?
Yeah, but... So, what I tend to notice in sports that happens is once the thing you're doing bad gets good, then the things that you're doing good all of a sudden don't continue to go that well. So,
we just spent a long time talking about how we're not doing anything good. So, it can't get worse.
No, I'm talking about Anthony Davis.
All right, I know.
I'm saying all of a sudden Hill, Galloway start hitting some threes, that's going to be the game that Anthony Davis struggles. Like, that's just how it happens in sports. I see it too often where people go, man, if we could just get our defense to average, you know, Aaron Rodgers is throwing the ball over the field, and then all of a sudden their defense gets good, and for some reason Aaron Rodgers isn't good anymore. Or, you know, it's a crazy thing that seems to happen in sports. You rarely see the team that puts all of it together. So, yeah, the threes might start falling, but if you want to talk about regression or progression to the mean, then, yeah, the threes will start falling, but Anthony Davis also isn't going to be averaging 40 points per game, so that'll come down, the three-pointers will go up, it'll even out, and you'll still have way more losses than wins.
Yeah.
They don't have the horses on this team, and you saw, I thought what San Antonio did that was so smart is, how many times did you see a double team and then the ball get kicked out to Frazier for three, and San Antonio didn't sprint out at him? They just kind of laid back, and then he would kind of try to drive, wouldn't get anywhere because they didn't run out on him, and then we would see kind of a forced shot at the end of the possession. I mean, smart teams are going to be able to defend this Pelicans team even better than they have been so far, and that's scary when the offensive rating is 29. I think the offense could actually get a little worse before it gets better.
Maybe.
I mean, Solomon Hill and Omer Asik, if they're playing the way they're playing now, you're starting a game.
Yeah, but
five, right?
We're talking razor-thin margins here. Like, if they make one three-pointer, suddenly they're not the 28th worst, they're the 21st worst. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to be that hard to improve more, you know, and not be in as awful a situation as they are right now.
Think Anthony Davis is going to average 13 free throw attempts for the whole season?
No, he's not. Anthony Davis is going to come down. Yeah, it's going to come down, but I'm like, when you take a shot away from Anthony Davis, it doesn't go to nobody. Somebody else is taking that shot, and it'll probably be better than what most of our supporting cast has been doing so far, because they're not going to be as bad as they've been so far.
Okay, so I say, like I said to you, Jrue Holiday's coming back, 13-14 game. I need you to get me a couple of wins just so we're not 1-12 when he comes back. That would be your primary solution. Is right now, Asik and Ajinsa are both playing 13 minutes. Terrence Jones about 15. It sounds like you would ramp that up to like 22 to 25 for Omer and basically take away those minutes, mostly from Ajinsa and then also some from Jones.
Yeah, and I'd probably give Dante Jones his minutes.
Okay, and then anything else that you're doing, that you've seen that you go, that five-man lineup could be an above-average lineup in the NBA, and I'm going to ride that more than they have been?
No, because I haven't seen any individual player play extremely well other than Davis. Like, you can't make a lineup when guys have been playing this poorly. Like, it's just, that's the reality. Until we can figure out what they're actually going to do once they settle into the system and start shooting more at what we expect them to do. And if they suck this much, then this is going to be the worst team in the league. Like, that's the reality. Like, if they play the way they've been playing every single game the same way, which I don't think is going to happen, but if they did, this is going to be the worst team in the league. I don't care if Anthony Davis is on it. They have one player who has a PER above 15 other than Davis. You can't have that.
Yeah, I mean, how about Jrue Holiday? Do you think, let's say he came back tomorrow and he was the best version of Jrue Holiday we've ever seen in New Orleans, how does that make you feel about this team? And let's say, you know, the other guys, no, they didn't become great shooters, but they became what you expected going into the season, maybe 34 to 38% guys. Would you be pretty optimistic about that team if all those things happen?
I think it's a 500 team.
Okay.
So kind of what we've been saying. Like, did anyone come into the season thinking they were going to win 48 games in the season? Or, you know, 50? No, I don't think so. I think the realistic idea was we'd be hitting 41 if everything went right, maybe 44, 45. And not everything went right.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I say. I see these games. I mean, I think any realistic Pelicans fan knew the second they lost the Denver game that they were starting the season 0-3.
Yeah.
I can't imagine anybody thought they were going to win either of those two games. So, whatever, those are games you throw away anyway. I would say, and again, if you're going on Lowe's report and some other things that have been heard, you know, and we're looking at a mid-October return or mid-November return for Jrue Holiday, I think these next 7 to 9, however many more games he's going to miss, are just entirely crucial. If he comes back and they're 1-9 or 1-10, like, of course the season wouldn't be over, but that's just, that's a hole that's, you can't dig out.
1-9, 1-10, it's over. I'm sorry. Especially because, like, you just look at the schedule. If they went through this many easy teams and came out with one win, it's over. You gotta bank some of those.
You think there's some easy games on the schedule?
I think that Milwaukee and Phoenix and Sacramento and Milwaukee again and Los Angeles Lakers and Orlando, I think all of those games are eminently winnable. I'm not saying that the Pelicans are going to be able to be favored in many of them. In a few of them they will be. But like those, you should win half those games.
Yeah, just looking at the current team they have right now, I would say home against Milwaukee and maybe the Lakers games are the only games in which...
You don't think, home against Phoenix?
No.
Home against the Lakers?
Phoenix has... Okay, let's play a little game. Best player on the court is Anthony Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you say in a Phoenix-New Orleans game is number 2?
Probably Bledsoe.
Who's number 3?
Maybe Devin Booker, although he's been playing pretty crappily.
Who's 4?
Hmm.
What number would you have to get to until you named a Pelican?
I probably would name number 5. I would give Frazier. Like, they have nothing besides Knight, Booker, and Bledsoe on that team.
You would take Tim Frazier over T.J. Warren?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
Chandler's kind of falling apart, so...
I might have to get to 8 until I named a Pelican.
Okay.
So, I just... When you're talking about... I mean, even if you do the Milwaukee exercise, I would say Anthony Davis is first. I would say Milwaukee probably has 2 through 5 or 2 through 6. Like, Tim Frazier, he's been putting up nice stats and everything, but you need to look no further for what the rest of the objective NBA thinks to see the contract in the same exact offseason, the contract Dellavedova got versus Tim Frazier. Dellavedova has championship experience, I might go 2 through 6 or 7 is on Milwaukee, so every single team that we play is going to have more talent than us, at least how I see it, except for maybe you could argue the Lakers just because their talent is so young. But even then, I would probably give them 2 through 5, 2 through 6. I mean, the second best player on this Pelicans team right now, I don't know how many teams they would even be the 5th or 6th best player on. It's the talent gap is, to me, considerable between the Pelicans and every team that they play, where Anthony Davis is going to have to be a god and some other guys are going to have to kind of play above their head for them to win games with Jrue out. But you don't see it that way. You see clear pathways to winning 3 or 4 of these next 10 games?
I think it's... So if they don't win that many, it's over, and this team is an utter disaster. I even Jrue comes back, I don't care. It's an utter disaster. Like, so here's another thing I've just got to say here is we spent years talking about, you know, continuity, about guys playing together and becoming better. Name 2 guys on this team who have spent 1,000 minutes playing together. I guess maybe Dante Cunningham and Davis?
Dante, yeah, because Alonzo G isn't there anymore. Otherwise,
right.
It would have Yeah.
Like, there is no, like, this is a completely brand new team. There is no continuity here at all. All of these guys are, like, Frazier didn't play with Davis for most of last year because Davis got hurt and sat the end of the season out when Frazier was playing. Like, Dante Cunningham is the only one who's actually bridged the gap between those two players. And outside of that, I guess Ashik has played with Davis for some time now. And Ajinsa has played a little bit of time with Davis, but Ajinsa has never played a lot of minutes anyways. So, like, all of these guys are figuring out their roles, how they play off of each other. It takes a little bit of time before they even get to familiar territory. And since they're not brilliant players, they're not going to just come in and look good anyways. They've got to figure all of this out. So I'm never going to sit here and say that what we've seen the past three games, which hasn't been a disaster. Well, some of the players have been disasters, but the whole team hasn't been a disaster, that it's going to just not get any better. That this is the Solomon Hill we're going to see, and maybe he upticks slightly. No, he's probably going to get significantly better. Etuan Moore is going to get significantly better. Heald can't be as bad as he's going to be. Like Galloway, we've seen him be a competent NBA guard for two seasons now. So he's not going to be a tire fire like he is at the moment. So these guys are going to figure it out. They're going to stop looking so bad. And we're going to have a better baseline than we do for these at the moment so that Davis can settle down a little bit. And still, well, the team will have a chance to win three or four of these games.
Yeah, see, that what you just said to me was so confusing when held up against what you said before that, because you said before that if they were essentially 1-10, it would be a disaster, but
it is.
The whole reason why I think they're going to be 1-10 is because of what you just said, that they need time. I mean, they both have bad players and no continuity. Why are they going to be better than 1-10? And like, to me, that wouldn't make it a disaster. That would make it what it probably should be. And that, yeah, they are going to get better, but not over the course of 2 weeks.
So forget about what you're seeing on this team. Take an average, poor NBA team. Just take, like, the Phoenix Suns of 3 years ago. And I tell you they are going to play at home versus this Milwaukee at this Phoenix team, away at Sacramento, away at Milwaukee, at home versus Los Angeles and away at Orlando, and that's a set of games. Are you going to say they're losing all those games, or are you going to assume they're probably going to lose half those games? Or what would you, I mean?
No, I mean, losing half those games mean you win half those games.
Right.
And a bad team doesn't win half of any.
But those are not good teams either. So a
bad team doesn't go 500 against other bad teams. They're still bad against other bad teams.
No, they tend to win about half their games against, like, equal talent teams.
Yeah, and that's what I just said, is I don't think they're equal talent. I think every single team the Pelicans are going to play with Drew, Tyreek, and Quincy Pondexter gone have more talent than the Pelicans. I think the only team that might not right now is Philadelphia and Brooklyn. Those are the only two games in which, if they were at New Orleans, I would say that the Pelicans should win those games 8 out of 10 times or more. I think every other team they're playing, I don't care what building it's in, every other team they're playing has more talent than the Pelicans.
Okay.
Every one of those that you listed. So okay. if they win, it'll be because, you know, they outperformed, out-executed, the other team was cold, whatever you want to call it. So, we'll see. I don't think it's a disaster if they basically lose a bunch of games that I think they should anyway. So, we'll see.
Okay.
I think it's a bad formula because they're playing at such a bad pace and they're the lesser talented team. I think they actually could win some of these games if they played Monty Ball and just made it ugly. So I guess I think it's a combination of the lack of talent and the style of play they're playing.
Poor coaching.
Poor coaching fit. So, like, I think I think Alvin Gentry, like many coaches, if given the right personnel, all of a sudden he's a good coach. Given the wrong personnel, all of a sudden he's a bad one. I don't think he, you know, he overcomes it like a guy like Rick Carlisle, but I only think there's a couple of those guys anyway. But yes, it's a terrible coaching fit for the roster that they have.
Yeah. I don't know what roster I would trust Alvin Gentry with to be really good with. Unless you're like talking Golden State Warriors or something.
I think
good anyways.
I think you put him and Darren Erman. Yeah. Yeah, no, he's not a good coach, but I think what we call good coaches and bad coaches are more on the players. I think that there's five coaches that really matter,
mm-hmm.
and that everywhere else it's kind of like you're going to be what your players are. If you're, you know, is Frank Vogel a bad coach now and he was great 4 years ago? Like, wouldn't it make more sense that he's learned more and become a better coach?
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden he's losing. Oh, he must have been stupid. No, it's just he has worse player. And I think it's a similar case with Gentry. He's not good. He's not bad. He's like, you know, probably 200 other coaches that this league has seen over the last 30 years.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to let you start then, because you think we're going to get some wins, so I want you to tell me how and why. I want you to pick a team from this week, tell me what you think about them, and why this Pelicans team can beat them.
So they're at home versus Milwaukee and Phoenix, and they're going to Memphis. I am 100% of the belief that they're going to at least take out Phoenix. And I know you think Phoenix is... but. I think that there is absolutely nothing on Phoenix that could make Anthony Davis even blink. And while Bledsoe is a very good guard, Devin Booker, they're relying on him a lot. And he's still in his second season, and if you've seen what he's done so far this season, he's shooting like a superstar or taking shots like a superstar. He is not making them like a superstar. So... you actually want him to do that? If you're Phoenix, you're out there saying, try anything you can, see what settles in, see, you know, practice these kinds of moves. You want to have the situation like they did with Kevin Durant in his rookie season where they made him a shooting guard and had him shoot 20 times, even though he'd never been a shooting guard in his life. And Devin Booker, they're not, now you're the starting shooting guard. You shoot like the starting shooting guard and go at it. So that is going to cause all kinds of problems. Like, just in general, with their efficiency. And Brandon Knight's mediocre, and unfortunately, even though I love him so much, you know, PJ's not playing very well anymore, and Tyson Chandler's not playing very well anymore. So I think this is just a team that the Pelicans can take. So I just don't see anything on this team that I'm terrified of. Who's going to shred the Pelicans?
Yeah. And see, I see that it's subject. Like, I always try to picture, fine, let's imagine you're a Suns blogger and Suns fan.
Yep.
Wouldn't you be saying, basically, Anthony Davis, yeah, he could go get 40, heck, 50, and the other scrubs on that pellet? Like, you're saying that Devin Booker hasn't been good that far. But just 10 minutes ago, you were saying about how all these Pelican players, they're bound to get better, but you're not giving the same benefit of the doubt to Devin Booker.
Yeah, the difference with Devin Booker is he's trying things he shouldn't be right now. And if he continues to do those things, like, he's not going to be better. He'll be better over a long period of time.
Yeah, I think it's... yeah, I think it's wishful thing. Again, Anthony Davis is the best player in this game. If I was, let's say, a GM just trying to win one game tomorrow, and I had a draft pool of all the players on both these teams, the next 8 guys I take would be from Phoenix until I got to likely Tim Frazier, Etuan Moore. I would take all 5 of their starters, Brandon Knight, Barbosa, and still PJ Tucker. And then I would even consider I just think they have so much more right now on their roster. So is it winnable? Of course. I just think Phoenix wins this game 6 out of 10 times. But yeah, very possible that the Pelicans could win this one. I fear that most people are like you and kind of look at the schedule and think, okay, well, we're going to get right against Milwaukee and Phoenix. And because of that, if they lose either or both of those games, people are going to get very upset. But I just objectively, looking back, pretending I'm not a fan of either team, I see more talent on Phoenix and Milwaukee than I see on New Orleans.
Yeah, Milwaukee, too, has been, they've been kind of struggling, and I think it's obvious why they've been struggling. Like, they have no shooting anymore. With Middleton out, they're actually playing Rashad Vaughn, who's actually played better than they expected, but he's still not much in the way of a threat. And the rest of the team, like, I guess Mirza Teletovic, he's a shooter. But like if we pay attention to what's gotten the Pelicans so far, it's been they've gotten penetration, they've got ball movement. The Pelicans gamely try to stay out there, but sometimes they lose and get open three-pointers, and other teams have been burying them, and this team isn't burying any of them. So that's how the Pelicans win this game too, is they just the Bucks aren't going to be able to drum up enough offense.
Yeah, I do.
What do you think of Giannis? Do you think he's actually as good as he's looking? I mean, I said a while ago I thought that Giannis would be Garnett to Davis's Duncan, kind of, like that kind of combination.
Yeah, and I thought that was so crazy that I honestly still remember that, and I'll probably never forget you saying that. That you, and I mean, you went further. You said that you thought that there was going to be debates about which one was better, and you know, yet. If you look at
Duncan and Garnett over the course of there was like 3 years or 3 or 4 years where basically it was at that point it was Weber, Garnett, and Duncan, and then eventually Nowitzki came in there. And there were years where people were legitimately like Garnett's better than Duncan. And it's fine if you have a couple seasons where one guy's better than the other one. Over the course of the career, I don't think anybody on the planet would ever say Duncan is worse than Garnett. Duncan's a better player, but there were years where they were so close it didn't matter.
Yeah, and I don't think Giannis ever gets there. I think a big part of the hype is the name, the size of him. But as far as production and who he is and who I think he will be, I think he'll be 85 to 90% of Grant Hill, which is a very good NBA player, but we're not talking about the top elite or the guy who's going to, you know, put his team on the back and win 50, 55 games just because he's on the team or, you know, make big playoff runs. Like, I think he's a nice player, but, you know, I think he's also going to be limited. And I see a B-plus. Grant Hill.
Okay.
That's good. Do you see better? I mean, what would you say his absolute, fairly realistic ceiling is?
I would fully expect that he will post a couple 2010 and 2005 seasons.
Okay, but those are stats. I'm talking about.
No, I mean.
What kind of impact? Well, no, because, I mean. Tyreke Evans was 25 and 5. That don't mean. I mean, just stats don't tell you. Do you ever think he could be as good as Scottie Pippen was?
No, but then I think Scottie Pippen's one of the best 35-40 players of all time. I mean, Giannis, I think, could be Chris Webber. Like, I really do believe that at some point he will be one of the power forwards who is the elite 4 or 5 in the league at any one time. And when you take a look at that just the position, and you come up with the best players, you'll have to not acknowledge he is one of the five. Like right now, you have to say it's Davis and Blake Griffin and who the hell are the other big major Aldridge. Like I'm kind of struggling a little bit, but I think in like a couple of years, Giannis will be there, and there won't be any question that he should be.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, that's good. I don't think that's obviously anywhere near what I think Anthony Davis is or can be.
Okay.
So I guess I'm just trying to figure out, I think everybody agrees that he's good. I'm just trying to figure out, are we talking about that superstar guy who's in top five in the entire league conversations, or are we talking about, like who do you think is going to have a better career, Giannis or Porzingis?
That's a good comparison. I think they'll probably be about the same.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think he's a good player, but it's not like when we're going against Milwaukee, he is or I ever think will be a guy that truly terrifies me just because I think he's one of those guys that's always going to have his limits as far as how much he could truly dominate a game or dominate a series.
So we've talked Milwaukee and Phoenix. Do you think it's just as likely that it's more likely they're going to lose both those games than they're going to win? We haven't talked about being in Memphis on the second night of a back-to-back again. Thanks, league office. Any chance they go into Memphis on the second night of a back-to-back and have a chance to pull that game out?
If Conley or Gasol are injured or taking a rest day. If those two are both playing, I'm not going to say it's impossible, but I'd put the odds at 10% or lower. I think it would take their best game of the season in order for them to beat them.
Do you think that highly of the Grizzlies?
I think that highly of those two.
Okay.
Like even tonight, they should have lost to Washington.
Yeah.
Washington had them dead to rights, and then Gasol and Conley just stepped up down the stretch, got the game tied, got it into overtime, and then found a way to win it. And, you know, Zach Randolph is playing that role, the one that I'm advocating for over and over. Zach Randolph and Enes Kanter have been the exact guys I'm talking about is those big men off the bench who just score points in bunches in small periods. So they kind of have that, but really in their starting lineup and everywhere else, it's Gasol and Conley. And to me, if this game is close, which it should be, I can't see a scenario in which the Pelicans up by 15 in the fourth quarter. So you would think the best case scenario is it's close. And the Grizzlies have Gasol and Conley in the final 5 minutes, and the Pelicans have Davis with the Grizzlies focusing almost solely on Davis, and you ask me who's going to win those final 5 minutes, I would bet on, you know, Conley and Gasol 9 out of 10 times, wouldn't you?
Yeah, no, I'm not arguing with you that I think they have I was just wondering if you thought there's a chance they could pull it out anyways.
Yeah, if, like I said, if there's a rest day or one of them is hurt.
Okay. James Ennis is tearing up the place.
Yeah, I mean,
He's shooting unsustainably well, like 57% from three. So
he reminds me of remember the first couple of games after he went to L.A., Xavier Henry?
Right, where he was the new star.
Go, he was our guy.
Yeah,
I think it'll be the same with Ennis, but again, like, that's a guy, they actually didn't even put the qualifying offer out to, but that's a guy, I mean, my whole thing with the Solomon Hill was I would have never signed him. That's a guy in Ennis you could have had as a holdover for a year, and I just don't think that in 100 different simulations, Hill was ever going to give you that much more than Ennis, so just go with Ennis or somebody like it and, you know, look for your small forward at, you know, later when you got a high draft pick or money to spend and guys actually wanting to come to you. So it is what it is. But, yeah, the Ennis versus Solomon Hill battle will be epic.
I don't think anyone has ever thought someone would say that. And Wade Baldwin, shout out to, I think it was Nick. Again, we're really bad because we're always confusing, is it Nick or is it Graham who said it? One of those two thought Wade Baldwin was going to be hot.
Yeah.
And he's been pretty good for the Grizzlies, so.
Yeah, I mean, they are what they are. That's going to be the toughest one to win, but I guess I'll just ask you, are you going to be disappointed at anything worse than 2-1?
Disappointed? Yes.
This week?
Yes, because I want my team to win. And I'm still holding out hope. I'm sorry. I'm not in the dumps 100% on this team yet. You got to give me, like, 3 more games.
Oh, I'm not in the dumps. It doesn't make me emotionally upset at all.
It makes me emotionally upset.
I just think objectively they are...
They need to win 2 of these games.
Okay. And if they don't, you'll come back on the podcast next Sunday and what?
I'll say they need to win the next 3 games.
All right, so basically you're giving them the next 10 or 11 games. They got to walk out with at least 3 or 4 wins, or to you, the season is effectively a disappointment and pretty much over.
Well, it's over, and then it's just you shift into the let's just see what fun things there are to watch on an individual level.
Yeah, I fear with that when that happens, a lot of people are going to be blaming Drew Holiday for missing 10-12 games for something that I'm surprised how many people don't think that it's quote-unquote a good excuse for him not to be playing a stupid game with the ball. But
so I did have one stat I wanted to throw at you and just get your take on whether it was real or a mirage that the Pelicans have done. Because it was something that stood out for me. It's something that's improved dramatically, and it's something that's been a problem, a very big problem for the Pelicans for probably the last 4 years. They've always been one of the worst at forcing turnovers. They've, for the past 4 years, I think they've been averaging around 6.25 steals, and just even if you don't talk steals, you just talk forcing turnovers. They're generally like bottom 10. So far, they've been top 10 at forcing turnovers. They're averaging 10 steals a game. They haven't been necessarily turning them into fast break points, but they have been playing well enough on the perimeter to get those deflections, to poke those balls away, to force bad passes. When you're watching it, does it feel like it's more like the other teams are just still getting in the flow and they're throwing the ball out of bounds? Or do you think this is actually something that might hold up?
So Denver was absolutely careless.
Okay.
And then Golden State has been for the last couple of years. So I would think, I'm not looking at the numbers now. Maybe you could pull them up. How did we do in that category against San Antonio? Because I feel like that will be more the norm than the other two.
So against San Antonio, let's see, I have to look. They got 6 steals and forced 9 turnovers, which is what they've been doing every year before this.
So I think that'll be closer to the norm.
Think San Antonio is abnormally careful?
With the guys that they were playing, I mean, if they had rolled out all their guys, maybe, but I think that Denver and Golden State are more on the other side of the spectrum. Golden State or San Antonio is a little closer to average. So that's why I said close to what they did against San Antonio. Maybe a little better, but watching that Denver game, I felt like more of the mistakes were Denver's fault than the Pelicans doing well. And every time I watch Golden State, like if I was their coach, they would fire me in 2 weeks because I actually hate the way Golden State plays. I just think they get away with it, but they're the unnecessary behind the back passes and stuff that they do to try to show off and look good. I just I think that team could be so much better if they could just get rid of their egos, and I even felt that last year, which is insane.
They would have won 75 wins if you were their coach.
Oh, they would have, and they would have won a title because there was a play, I think it was in game, it was in game seven where Curry, in that whole epic time where it was like 4 minutes going back and forth, nobody was scoring, Curry threw a lefty behind, like behind the back pass to Clay in the corner for three. He was like 6 feet from him, could have made a simple chest pass, threw this behind-the-back garbage that went out of bounds. Like, I just, like, if I was coaching kids who played like them, they'd all be off my team. So, just, I'm a grumpy old man. So, anyway, you asked me, no, I think that what we see from them defensively will be closer to whatever numbers they put up against San Antonio.
Okay. Adam, I feel like that their perimeter defense has improved enough that it's going to be better than it has been. So.
All right. Well, sounds like I'm a little more down than you on this team as currently constructed. I like it better when Drew comes back, if Coupon was here, and if you could trade Reek for anything. But as of right now, I'm going 1-2. I see a win at Milwaukee against Milwaukee, a pretty severe beatdown against Memphis, and then a close loss against Phoenix.
You used to be not worried about Memphis at all, so this is a major shift for you. Like, you used to feel like the Pelicans could hold up against Memphis really well.
Right, when Monty was our coach and we played that way.
Well, we played that way, yeah. Okay, I'm actually predicting a 2-1 week, and one of the wins will be in Memphis. So,
you're crazy.
Yeah. So everybody, yeah, probably means you should be definitely betting against those two, because I'm terrible at predictions, and I'm always terrible at predictions. So thanks for listening to In the Know, and we'll be back in a week with more uplifting conversations about how awesome our team is.
Happy Halloween!
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.